What do you think of when you picture an American soldier? Probably a young man or woman, maybe in uniform, and almost certainly a U.S. citizen, right? Actually, almost 5% of first-time military recruits are non-citizens, many of whom have signed up with the expectation of earning citizenship by serving. However, according to author Sophia Optikar, this path is fraught with unexpected challenges. Sophia is a professor of urban studies at the City University of New York, and her new book is called Green Card Soldier: Between Model Immigrant and Security Threat. Here she is to share five of her big ideas.
Hello, my name is Sophia Optikar. I'm a professor at the City University of New York, and I wrote a book called The Green Card Soldier: Between Model Citizen and Security Threat. I'm going to share with you five of the key insights from my book. Insight number one, the U.S. military creates immigrants and then recruits them as military workers. Immigrants have worked in the U.S. military from its founding. With or without U.S. citizenship, immigrants participated in every U.S. war and military campaign. They were drafted, enlisted voluntarily, and have been pushed to enlist by economic and social factors. When we consider the long history of immigrants and the U.S. military, we also see immigrants resisting the military draft and organizing against U.S. militarism. But where do immigrants come from? Although it is common to imagine the United States as a perpetual American dream magnet, drawing people from all over the world, migration is not a natural or passive process. In too many cases, the U.S. military damages and displaces communities across the globe, creating immigrants. Then it incorporates these immigrants into the military workforce to do more of the same. In the early 20th century, the United States maintained a brutal colonial occupation of the Philippines. U.S. forces slaughtered hundreds of thousands of Filipinos. The U.S. military had developed its genocidal tactics in wars against Native American nations. In the Philippines, it honed them on mass slaughter and oppression of Filipinos. Disruption at this scale, coupled with active recruitment of workers, created a stream of Filipino immigrants to the United States well past independence. The U.S. military, particularly the Navy, recruited Filipinos and Filipino immigrants. Hundreds of thousands of Filipinos fought alongside the U.S. military during World War II. But the promise of citizenship and veteran benefits that was made to them was only partially realized, and not until 50 years later. Today, Filipino immigrants, their children, and their grandchildren continue to work in the U.S. military in disproportionate numbers. More recently, the United States provided military training to right-wing forces in Central America to violently suppress popular socialist movements. This contributed to mass migrations of people to the United States. Today, the U.S. military actively recruits immigrant youth from Central American immigrant communities. It touts their cultural backgrounds as extra skills they bring as workers in the service of the U.S. imperial project in Latin America and beyond. Insight number two. Military service is supposed to lead to U.S. citizenship, but that often doesn't happen. Since the Civil War, there has been an expedited track to citizenship available through labor in the military. This does not mean that military service automatically makes you a U.S. citizen. Rather, immigrants have a reduced residency requirement to be eligible for naturalization. About 150,000 immigrants became U.S. citizens through this military naturalization pathway in the last 20 years or so. But the road to citizenship is fraught. The fit between the military and immigration systems is poor. For active duty military workers especially, it is often difficult to go through the naturalization process while working long hours, moving often, and being limited in their ability to leave the military base. In some years, the U.S. government rejected military naturalization applications at higher rates than it did for civilians, usually finding fault on the grounds of good moral character. This could mean committing crimes, committing fraud earlier on in the immigration process, being what U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Service refers to as a habitual drunkard, being part of the Communist Party, or some other unspecified moral trait that the immigration officer decides disqualifies an applicant from being considered a person of good moral character. This all matters because when immigrants become U.S. citizens, they have protection from deportation, opportunities to sponsor the migration of family members, increased job options, and the right to vote. Being a U.S. military veteran alone does not give one these rights and protections. Thousands of military veterans who were not U.S. citizens have been deported. Insight number three, celebrating immigrant military workers helps whitewash what the U.S. military does. Polls show that a rising number of people in the world see U.S. power and influence as a major threat. And most Americans say that the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan were not worth fighting. What's more, U.S. veterans, whether or not they participated in these wars, say that the cost outweighed the benefits. The work of U.S. military includes protecting imperial resource extraction, enforcing political regimes benefiting U.S. capital, and expanding and conquering new territory for further exploitation. Inside the United States, the military and militarized law and immigration enforcement agencies crush popular resistance to resource extraction and white supremacy and maintain the violence of the border with Mexico. In this context, U.S. political leaders can point to immigrant soldiers to try to legitimate themselves, the endless wars, and the military. What is characterized as the choice of foreigners to enlist in the U.S. military and risk injury and death makes U.S. military operations seem approved and justified even by those not born in the United States. This is not new. During the Korean War in the mid-20th century, the U.S. military took young Japanese Americans who grew up in U.S. concentration camps during World War II and sent them to interrogate prisoners of war. Using these young people was meant to show Korean prisoners that the United States was an inclusive place for Asians and a benign force in Korea. Meanwhile, the U.S. dropped over 500,000 tons of bombs on Korea, destroying Korean cities. It deployed chemical weapons and napalm. The U.S. military is responsible for the deaths of millions of Koreans. Some immigrant advocates argue that immigrants deserve rights because immigrants serve in the military. Others push for undocumented youth to be able to enlist, something the Department of Defense also lobbies for. This type of advocacy feeds the U.S. war machine and entrenches imperial violence. Insight number four. Some people say that the military helps immigrants assimilate. I show the injuries of assimilation. The U.S. military is often seen as a meritocratic, colorblind institution, and it uses millions of taxpayers' money to market itself that way. Yet research shows racial bias in promotions and military justice, discrimination in deployment assignments, and racial disparities in the risk of PTSD. White supremacist organizations have a significant presence in military ranks. Racism is built into the way the military functions. But the narrative of military as an institution that repairs the racism of the U.S. society is strong. The military assimilates immigrants into racial and gender hierarchies. Even when immigrants see military labor as a way to belong and become successful in the United States, they incur the costs of assuming their place in the hierarchy. These are what I call the injuries of assimilation. Women in the military face sexual violence. Immigrant women are even more vulnerable. Hina, an immigrant from Nepal, enlisted in a desperate quest to survive financially. She explained to me what it was like to be the only woman in her training unit. Hina's co-workers made unwanted sexual advances, told her she was unqualified for the job, and made misogynist jokes. Hina felt like she had to represent all women in the military, single-handedly changing perceptions of women soldiers. Hina could not rely on the culture of male camaraderie that structures military units, battle buddies who have each other's backs. At best, she was a conditional member of her unit, having to prove herself. Rape culture and racialized misogyny are not unique to the military, but military contracts make the job difficult to leave, and victims are isolated from supportive social networks. When they come forward, they get blamed and punished. Immigrants in the military deal with suspicions of their loyalty and bear the burden of always having to prove themselves. When Hina broke her hip jumping from an airplane and had to take a break from intense physical training while it healed, she remembered being pushed to recover faster and told that the military could not keep her while injured. Despite the MRI that clearly showed her fractured hip, Hina's commanding officer accused her of faking it. As an immigrant, Hina was suspected of only caring about getting U.S. citizenship. Hina was still in pain when she decided to start jumping again, and she went on to break both ankles and a wrist. What is labeled as service in the U.S. military is physically and mentally harmful work. Military workers suffer from physical injuries to the body and brain, exposure to harmful substances, and deep psychological wounds. In a myriad of ways, their very work supports a violent global order enforced by the U.S. military. The price of assimilation into U.S. society is participation in the oppression exclusion of others. This leaves a mark on the humanity of military workers and those of us who the U.S. military supposedly protects. Insight number 5. Green card soldiers are not simply victims. Immigrants in the military are harmed by their labor. Yet, we must not think of them only as victims to be rescued. Immigrants are navigating intersecting systems of oppression that span the globe. Their experiences differ tremendously, depending on how they fit into hierarchies of race, class, gender, sexuality, and other social dimensions. The military labor force faces racist, misogynist, and dangerous work conditions. But military labor is not just another job. Even though many are pushed into the military by the hardships influenced by intense marketing campaigns that target children, military workers do bear responsibility for what the U.S. military does. But so do U.S. civilians in whose names the U.S. military supposedly operates. As individuals, we should consider our responsibility and complicity, keeping in mind the limits of individual action while acting with moral conviction. Among the very first U.S. military casualties of the War on Terror were immigrants. But immigrant military workers were also among the first resistors to the U.S. invasion of Afghanistan and Iraq. Like many of the people interviewed for my book, Camilo Mejia was a working-class immigrant who enlisted in the military in search of financial stability and in hopes of finding a place for himself in U.S. society. Camilo became the first soldier to refuse a deployment to Iraq. In the course of his 8 years in the military, and after witnessing the bloody work of imperialism firsthand, Mejia came to see the absolute clarity of the wrongfulness not only of the war against Iraq, but of war in general. As he wrote in his memoir, Road from Our Ramadi, Mejia fought his own war, war against the system I had come from, a battle against the military machine, the imperial dragon that devours its own soldiers and Iraqi civilians alike, for the sake of profits. Mejia publicly decried the way U.S. soldiers were treated as disposable tools of empire, and the torture, mass murder, and racism directed at Iraqis. Mejia's act of moral courage carried the risk of losing his lawful permanent residency and foreclosed the path to U.S. citizenship. Mejia went on to become an outspoken critic and organizer against U.S. imperialism, while living with uncertainty about his future as an immigrant in the United States. Thank you for listening.
Thank you, Sophia. That was Sophia Optikar with 5 big ideas from Green Card Soldier, Between Model Immigrant and Security Threat. I'm Michael Kovnat. Thanks for listening.